Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
Sedano with you here on 710 ESPN, presented by Progressive Insurance. All our guests appear via the Shell Penzoil Performance Line. Mark Jones going to join us here. He did just text me back, Laura, so he's ready to go when you are ready to call him. So, Mark Jones, one of the voices, one of the great voices of the NBA on ESPN, was lucky enough to call Horse yesterday. And Jonesy, thanks so much, buddy. I know you and I have been talking, so I know everyone is healthy, safe, and sound, but we appreciate you taking the time. But my first question is, how hard was all that, man? That seemed like it had to be a challenge, even for a master broadcaster like you, with all the different people in all the different locations.
Oh, George, I appreciate the kind words, brother. I really do, and hope you and your family are staying safe, too. It was arguably the hardest assignment I've had in almost 30 years at ESPN, because everything felt so understandably remote. You know, me here at my home in Miami, you know, Indianapolis with Tamika Catchings, Mike Conley in Columbus, Zach LaVine all the way out on the West Coast, up outside Seattle, 20 minutes, and working off of my iPad and, you know, the other people at the other remote locations working off of literally their cell phones. When you think about the magnitude of what we were able to pull off yesterday, George, it was basically 2 hours of television done with iPads, iPhones, and sons and daughters of NBA players and other various family members and friends running a second camera. It was truly remarkable.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question. Here's the thing. Like, it's funny because we know this, Jonesy, you and I. We've been doing this for a long time. The internet is undefeated, and Twitter's a place for complaints. Like, that's all. I responded to someone. I said, let me ask you a question. Did you honestly think that us and the NBA were going to send strangers into people's homes and put up cameras during a pandemic? Like, and then when you put it to people that way, they're like, oh, I guess you're right. And yeah, the fact that we were able to pull that off and you guys were able to pull that off was tremendous. Because here's the thing. Sure, we could have sent them cameras, but then you wouldn't have had the interaction and the great trash talk between the players, whether it was Trey and Chauncey or Zach LaVine and Paul Pierce, and you interacting with them. It was just awesome to have that interaction, too.
Yeah, it was good, man. The byplay between, you know, Chauncey and his mentee, you know, Trey Young, that he basically has been taking care of and mentoring for like 2 or 3 years now was fantastic. And like you said, man, like, what did people expect? Like, you could not have expected 1080 high-def television in a situation of the world that we're living in right now. So, you know, to just have good wireless reception and internet service to get somewhat clear pictures, yeah, that was good TV, man. It was fun to see the banter and to have a little bit of access into the homes of Zach LaVine and Paul Pierce. Hey, listen, I had no idea that Paul Pierce had a Celtics logo, okay, yeah, on his home court. I had to ask him, how do you get away with that? Like, how does that play when you go to Roscoe's Chicken and Waffles and dudes are like asking you, yo, that logo's got to go, bro, you know?
Well, the two funny things that stood out to me beyond that were Trae Young looked like there was no way that looked like a regulation court by any stretch of the imagination in his driveway. If I was Chauncey, I would have protested had I lost that thing, man.
I know. George, it looked about like 9 feet tall, you know?
Yeah.
And when he was saying that he was taking a 15-foot foul shot, I'm like, maybe we need to get a tape measure and just like measure it off for the live audience just so we can make sure that nothing fishy is going on. But, you know, they all claimed that it was legit. You know, outside of really Mike Conley and, you know, Chauncey's court was really, you know, customized. The other ones were, you know, kind of a little bit fly as you go. So either way, man, it was some great shot making. I mean, Trae Young having to make shots from on the grass, on the dirt was interesting. I was surprised he didn't shoot more 35-foot bombs personally.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Well, he didn't have the space. It was just his driveway. He would have had to have gone out to the street. You know what I'm saying?
I think the Catchings had the hardest time, George. I mean, like, it was so windy, you could have seen Dorothy and Toto blowing by in the wind. It was so bad. Like, unless it was a layup, she wasn't going to make many shots. That one baseline shot that she made that was almost a three-pointer, I was shocked that it went in. I mean, she was up against the elements. Her camera actually collapsed twice during the time that we were shooting that, which was interesting. Because it was so windy, it got blown over.
Yeah, you could hear it when she was shooting. I did love basically how Zach LaVine put our buddy Paul Pierce in a wheelchair in that game. Paul, I know you're listening, brother. You looked old yesterday.
Hey, Zach LaVine, listen, I'm not going to give anything away, but if he continues like this, like just jumping up and tapping one side of the backboard and making a shot on the other side of the backboard, sure, technically that's not dunking, but like, what are you going to do, George? You're going to write a rule in that says you're not allowed to use your 40-inch vertical jump. You could only use 25 inches of vertical jump. I mean, what's anyone to argue with that, right? That's his strength.
Yeah, no question about it. So the semifinals air when, Jonesy?
Thursday, 7 o'clock Eastern time.
All right, so Thursday, 7 o'clock Eastern, 4 o'clock Pacific here in L.A.
Yeah.
People can check out the semifinals, and you have Quigley versus LaVine, right? And then you have Chauncey versus Mike Conley. Yes, yeah.
And that's the funny thing with Conley. Like, you know, I called up a couple of coaches that our Western Conference coach said, hey, man, like, Mike Conley looks way too comfortable calling weak-handed shots for his opponent in this horse game. I'm like, what's the scouting report say on him? And one coach hit me back and said, oh, yeah, Mike Conley's really right-handed. He just shoots it left-handed when he's taking jumpers. So, you know, interesting that we might want to call Mike Conley out on that at some point.
That's funny. That is pretty hilarious. And again, check it out Thursday, 4 o'clock Pacific on ESPN. Mark Jones, my buddy, will be on the call. Jonesy, there seems to be a lot of talk and chatter about trying to get these games back. Adam Silver has taken the right approach, in my opinion, you know, kind of under-promising and perhaps maybe over-delivering if we get to that point. Brian Windhorst is talking about a potential 25-day lead-up. You know, there's talk about Vegas. Where are you on just some of that stuff right now?
Well, you know, I think back, George, to the lockout season, 99-2000, that year, when we had a 50-game season. It was truncated. Everything was collapsed and compressed. And it was some of the best basketball that I remember seeing at that time, because every game really kind of mattered. But this is a little bit different context. In ramping back up, I think guys are going to have to be careful to have at least a week to 10-day training camp, because, you know, I'm watching video of Quinn Cook doing sprints in his apartment and Serge Ibaka doing wind sprints in his apartment in Toronto. That's great to stay in shape and get cardio, but it's not NBA quote unquote type of conditioning. So they're going to need to get back in the gym and have a nice training camp period of some sort, whether it's 1 week or 2 week before we start playing games, because LeBron James intimated best when he said, you know, everyone thinks this is good for me slowing down at 35 years old, getting rest. But once you ramp your body back up, you know, these athletes are really precisely tuned guys in that they have to keep their body at a certain level. And if they don't use it, they lose it. And then you got to get ready again. So I think Adam Silver and the league are doing the right thing in taking the cautious approach to getting back to it when we ultimately do.
Mark Jones with us here, one of the great voices of the NBA on ESPN. Yeah, look, I actually think that having a real training camp, even if it's truncated, will be beneficial to LeBron, because, you know, look, we know it. He says it. His season is always a ramp to the playoffs, and they were peaking at the right time, right? Like, in theory, they'd just beaten the Clippers and the Bucks. He was looking like an MVP candidate, and this slowdown will change things for him. Whereas, you know, Doc Rivers on the other side talking about how he thinks that having all this time off for Kawhi and Paul George will be great because their bodies weren't right at that particular time.
Yeah, they were definitely a different part of their curve, and LeBron was just starting to peak out, because, you know, he approaches it like a lot of Olympic athletes do in terms of peaking at the right time, whether you're a track and field sprinter, whether you're a swimmer in the Olympics. it's all a kind of a big picture panoramic 12-month schedule to hit the high point at exactly the right time. And you mentioned it, man, like the Lakers are coming off their best wins of the season against the Clippers and Bucks, and LeBron was dominant in both those games, and it looked like he was ready to go and ride that crest of the wave all the way to the NBA playoffs and perhaps all the way to the finals, maybe even to a championship. So it's interesting. You know, he's never been one to, George, you and I saw him up close down here in Miami for a number of years, 4 years during the four straight trips to the finals. He knows how to play it. He's got the best health professionals working with him. He knows his body and has the resources to dedicate to his body as well or more than anybody else in the league. So I don't doubt he will be ready, but he's already started tweaking, probably unbeknownst to most of us.
What would you like to see if they shorten the playoffs? Like, here's where I'm at. I'm okay with best two out of three in the first, maybe even in the second round, and then give me at least five in the conference finals, and I need seven in the NBA finals. If you had your druthers, how would you have it if we had to shorten some stuff up?
If we had to really compress it, I would say I would go back to how it was back in the day, where you had three out of five in the first round, and then perhaps even three out of five in the next round. I don't like the two out of three idea. That's a little too sudden, and I think in a two out of three format, the quote-unquote best team might not always win. I think you want to ultimately have and give the best teams a chance to win, and I think in a three out of five format, they can do it more so than a two out of three. So I would go, if we really had to squeeze it in, three out of five, three out of five, four out of seven, four out of seven. And I think at that point, maybe you don't have the large or extra large size asterisk at the end of the season when we denote a champion, as opposed to going two out of three, three out of five, four out of seven, something like that.
Oh, Jonesy, you know, though, if we did two out of three, gas bags like me and my boys at First Take, if one of these one or two seeds lost that first game, whoo, the heat would be on.
Oh, yeah. It sure would. It sure would. And it's funny. You think about, like, historically, right? Like, Toronto Raptors, they always lose that first game at home in the playoffs, right?
Yeah.
Think about a two out of three format with them. Like, this was before the Kawhi thing, the brief Kawhi, the fleeting Kawhi Leonard era. They would always lose that first game of the playoffs. Imagine a two out of three format where they lose and now they're suddenly under the gun, even though they might have home court. And then, Miami, this has been a great year for the Heat down here so far, and them sitting with the top four seed right now, I think they've got the depth to survive either two out of three, three out of five, four out of seven, whatever you pick. And I know the guys are staying in shape down here too.
Yeah, it'd be interesting, certainly. Jonesy, can we get you back on Friday after the next round of horse?
No doubt, George. No doubt. I know you saw the Vice Blue jersey hanging over my
I did. I saw that.
And I think I'm going to do a special jersey reveal for that number 22 Golden State Warriors jersey that I have.
Okay.
Erroneously guessing who that is in tribute to.
Okay. All right. I like it. I like it.
George, you know what it's all about down here in Miami. We're a Heat household, and it's hard to sneak any other jersey through the gate here. So I had to go real deep to dig that one up and throw it up in my makeshift studio.
All right, brother. Good talking to you as always. Stay safe, and we'll chat with you on Friday then.
You got it, George. Talk to you Friday.
All right, there he is. Mark Jones, one of the great voices of ESPN, the NBA on ESPN. He's doing the horse. We'll have him back on Friday and talk more horse and talk more hoops with him. But coming up next, our senior shout-out, Jackson Kramer of St. Anthony's High School, right fielder. Don't forget, 11:30, we're going to have the last 3 minutes of Kobe's final game, the 60-point performance, where he goes on a personal 11-2 run to give the Lakers the lead for good. And then Ireland will join us at 11:45. Our senior shout-out is next. Sedano with you here on 710 ESPN, presented by Progressive Insurance. Thanks to Mark Jones for joining us there, one of the voices of the NBA on ESPN, and called the horse action this past weekend. By the way, Progressive Insurance offering coverage options as unique as your business. Progressive covers companies of many sizes and specialties. Learn more at progressivecommercial.com. We'll have our senior shout out here in a moment. Let me know when Mr. Kramer is there. There. Okay, apparently he's there. So Jackson Kramer, St. Anthony's High School right fielder. We want to talk to him about his season. We want to congratulate him on a great career, a great season. And Jackson, thanks for joining us, buddy. How is everyone in your household? Everyone safe?
Yeah, everyone's good right now. Everyone's safe. Everyone's just dealing with this pandemic and being as a family and staying healthy together.
How are you managing, man? Are you still training? How are you managing school and academics and things of that nature?
Yeah, so I'm dealing with a broken foot right now. So I'm doing physical therapy, still doing weights in the garage, and just trying to keep my body and mind in shape, because I know when this is over, I can come back to baseball, or if it's done, just continue with my life as normal.
How did that happen, the foot?
So actually, it's an overuse injury, and unfortunately, it was just something random. I was walking, and then I felt it. And I played on it for a couple more days. And then it turns out it was the same injury Yao Ming overcame for a couple years, for a navicular fracture. And so I skipped the surgery and hoped to come back my senior season, because no one wants to miss their senior season. And a week away before I could DH, the season pretty much got canceled, which was the worst part.
Yeah, man, tough. And look, you know, you've been on the Long Beach Press Telegram's dream team for baseball for your sophomore and junior season, and yeah. And obviously, you know, you've had a great career there. What are some of the best memories you'll take away from your time playing baseball there?
Just the relationships I've created, the coaches I've been able to play under, Coach Dondo, Coach Mascaro, Coach Machete, all played so well in their career and taught their skills to us, the players, and their appreciation for us in this time, and the love of baseball just showed every day as we practiced with them and played with them.
Yeah, what do you? We were just telling stories about pranking, you know, teammates and whatnot, and friends and whatever. Because I was telling a story about Michael Carter Williams, who's an NBA player, and how in his second season, he and his team, he was playing with the Sixers, and they went to the allegedly haunted hotel in Milwaukee. There's two hotels in the NBA that are allegedly haunted, according to NBA players, that they hear all sorts of wacky stuff in the middle of the night. So he arranged with the hotel staff to enter all of the rookies' rooms, and they removed the vent, inserted walkie-talkies in the vents, sealed the vents shut, and then they added baby monitors in the rooms so he could see all the rookies that were on his floor, and he would whisper all sorts of nonsense into the walkie-talkie and sing nursery rhymes and freak them out. Were there any fun moments like that in all your years? I'm sure in baseball clubhouses, there's always some fun stuff going on.
Yeah, nothing too crazy like that, but my sophomore year, we got together with a team, and we wanted to TP most of the coaches, get some toilet paper on their lawns, and we actually went a little too far, because the next day, one of our coaches has three kids, and they were dealing with the toilet paper. It was raining that night, so it was the pain for them, and we were laughing, but we paid for it the next day. We don't run a lot.
How much is a lot? Like, how many, were they sprints, or were they like, or was it just keep going until I tell you to stop?
Oh, it was a lot of jogging. It was probably 20 laps on the field. It was one of those days where we regret, but it was probably worth it looking back.
Jackson Kramer, St. Anthony's High School right fielder in Long Beach, joining us here, an honor student as well. What do you want to study moving forward?
Yeah, so I want to pursue some sort of business or legal studies degree. So with this virus canceling the season, I was looking to play Division I in California, and unfortunately with a lot of the seniors of college right now wanting to stay next year, it kind of ruined my chances. So at the moment, I accepted my letter of intent to go to Berkeley to study legal studies. And then I'm still waiting for some schools to figure out if I could get a little scholarship or preferred walk-on for some of the big Division I schools.
That's awesome, man. That's a great place to start. Certainly your academics are great. You had a 4.35 GPA.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, you know, getting your academics right is fine, is the most important thing, I would say. The rest of it is fine. Like, if you can continue playing, of course, you'd want to continue to play, but academics have to come first, man, because, you know, baseball is fun. The camaraderie, as you mentioned, is fun. But, you know, you can build, yourself a great life moving forward with your academics.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, so Jackson Kramer with us here. I know you're a big Dodger fan, so yeah. I know Major League Baseball is doing everything they can to get going. There's talk about playing in a bubble city in Arizona and having all 30 teams there, whatnot. What do you make of that as just someone who is a Dodger fan, considering how good they are? Would you be okay with that, a truncated season, a shorter season, and potentially, you know, a stranger season like this?
I mean, you would have to, because we're obviously one of the best teams in the league, and we've gotten screwed and had some unlucky times in the World Series and the playoffs. Is there any way you can get back into the season and get back to where you started and eventually win that ring? Something you got to look for and eventually happen.
Who's your favorite Dodger?
My favorite Dodger was Chase Utley. We're both from Long Beach, and he even played in my Long Beach Little League. And one of my sister's good friends with his daughter, and so I haven't seen him before, but it's obviously a goal of mine to meet him at some point.
Oh, man, that would be awesome. You should try – Greg Bergman, producer of this show, can we try to set that up? Like, is Chase still around?
Yeah, I can see if I can find a way. Yeah, he's in L.A., definitely.
Yeah, let's try to set that up. Jackson, no promises, but we'll do our best to maybe set that up. Perfect. Even if it's, down the road or whatnot. We'll try our best to help you out with that, okay?
Awesome, thank you.
You got it, man. Well, listen, congratulations again on a great year. Just in general, all you've done, from an academic standpoint, from an athletic standpoint, we wish you the best in the future. Obviously, we'll keep tabs on you, and we'll do our best to try to connect you with Chase, man. Stay safe, stay healthy, you and your family, and thanks again for joining us.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
You got it. Take care. There he is. Jackson Kramer, St. Anthony's High School, right fielder down in Long Beach. So cool stuff. Bergman, I know I'm making you do extra homework, but the kid clearly wants to meet Chase Utley. I don't feel like that's that hard. It's not like I'm asking you to, have him meet, Mike Trout or Clayton Kershaw, a super duper star, Chase is retired. He's got some time on his hands.
Yeah, and he works. He does some stuff for Sportsnet, so it's definitely a possibility. I just got to figure out a way to get in touch with him. It's possible.
Make it happen, Bergman.
I'm doing my thing. I'll see what I can do.
Yeah,
just for Jackson.
The Michael Carter Williams story is funny. The kid's story about messing with the coach's yard is pretty hilarious too. But then you do have to see the problem when you mess with a coach is that you're going to pay dearly in the end, as Jackson taught us there in that particular story that he gave.
Going to get your legs moving a little bit for all those laps you're going to be running.
Yeah, I've got a great story as far as a prank. Like I've been pranked plenty, but I like to be the pranker as opposed to the pranky, though I'm pretty sure most people like to be the pranker the pranky.
No one wants to be pranked. And Laura was saying because I asked you in the break, are you the pranker or the pranky? And Laura's like, George is definitely the pranker.
So here's a quick story before we get to, and by the way, in the next segment, we're going to have the last 3 minutes and 5 seconds of actual game time in Kobe's last game, the 60-point performance. He goes on an 11-2 run, personal run himself, a Kobe 11-2 run against the Jazz to give them the lead for good. And we're going to have it for you as a treat on the 4-year anniversary of his final game. So stick around for that, and then Ireland at 11:45. So real quick, here's the story. So I have a friend, childhood friend I grew up with, lived, close to my house. We went to high school together, whatever. I used to take him to school in my car all the time, his brother too, all that. So he's super eccentric, still is. And also was, you'll have that friend when you went to high school, that he was like the guy who fell in love all the time. You know what I mean? Like he was always in love with somebody. So he was that guy. And he had just broken up with some girl, and one of our girlfriends took him to a psychic. And I'm sitting there with him in the room with the psychic, and he's like, bro, you got to buy into this stuff. And I'm like, well, this is nonsense. Like, what are we doing here? So I'm sitting on the couch while he's getting the psychic reading or whatever the hell was happening, and I got my arms folded. I'm just looking out the window, and the lady all of a sudden stops with him, and she looks at me, and she goes, in Spanish, she goes, tú no crees, which means you don't believe. And I'm like... And he goes and he points at me, you see, she knows. And I'm like, dude, what is wrong with you? Of course she knows. Look at my body language. What the hell's wrong with you? So anyway, we leave. We go back home. And again, I grew up in Miami where, look, there's some people that practice some, let's just call it voodoo, right? That's somewhat common in certain parts of the neighborhoods. And so he lived on a lake and we found a fish that had washed up ashore and it was dead. And we put it on this huge leaf, and then we put pennies around it, and we left it on his front porch. And this was the same day he went to see the psychic. And all of a sudden, me and my friends were like, bro, you got to come out here. You got to see this thing on your porch. And he walked out. He's like, oh, my God. What the hell is that? What the hell? How did that get here? And we were just like playing it up. And then eventually we just told him, no, dude, we put that there. He wanted to fight everyone. It was the most hilarious thing ever. But because he's a crazy person and he was super just, eccentric, like we just figured we'd prank him that way. But anyway, that is I think that's one of my favorite pranks that I've ever pulled all time. So
that's a good one. He's a little bit gullible, my friend. That's you got to know what's going on there.
Yeah. Yeah. He bought it. But the whole psychic thing, he was into all that at that particular time. But anyway. All right. The final 3 minutes and 5 seconds of Kobe's final game. He goes on a personal 11-2 run. We're going to have it all for you coming up in just a moment. And then John Ireland will join us at 11:45. Sedano, 710 ESPN. Sedano with you here on 710 ESPN, presented by Progressive Insurance. All our guests appear via the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. John Ireland coming up in just a second. It is the four-year anniversary of Kobe Bryant's last game. We're going to replay the last 3 minutes and 5 seconds of the actual game of Kobe's last game. It's about 10 minutes long. He goes on a personal 11-2 run to give the Lakers the lead for good in his 60-point performance. And then John Ireland at 11:45 will talk to us and recap that moment. I feel like it was a cool treat on the four-year anniversary. Here it is.
Nobody has left. Everyone's still in their seats at Staples Center. Hayward makes one out of two free throws, and the lead for Utah is 10. Kobe will bring it up for the Lakers. 3:15 to go in his career. Kobe dribbling left. One-on-one against Gordon Hayward. Kobe spins away from Hayward. Got to the rim. Elevates. Lay it up and in. 47 right. For Kobe.
Now we got to get him a three.
Here's Gordon Hayward with it. Hayward top of the key. Inside 3 minutes left in the game. Shelvin Mack with it. Crowd chaining defense. Three-pointer by Mack. Banked. It rimmed out, but Trevor Booker got the rebound, and the Lakers are now back on defense, and Chris Johnson gets away from his defender and lays it up and in.
Well, Kobe comes, just dribbles down and pulls up into a three.
If he hits a three, the roof might come off. Kobe has 47 points, 2:30 to go in his career. Kobe behind the three-point line, double team. Kobe with Gordon Hayward on him. Kobe shakes Hayward. Spins him to the middle of the lane. Drives to the rim. Lay it up and foul.
He got a chance to get the 49.
Two. If he makes these two, he would have 49 points.
Well, he's definitely going to get to 50 now.
With 2:16 remaining.
Kobe tonight, 18 of 46 from the field. 5 of 20 from three-point land.
The crowd cheering Kobe as he goes to the free throw line.
And nobody has left this building.
Free throw good. 48 for Kobe. He's 7 of 9 from the line tonight.
He's played 40 minutes at this point.
Crowd chanting MVP. Free throw good. 49 for Kobe. He's played a season-high 40 minutes. He has a season-high 49 points. And there are exactly 2 minutes, 5 seconds remaining in his career. Breathing heavy and obviously tired. Hayward dribbles left, down the middle, stripped, grabbed by Randall. Randall gives it to Kobe. 1 point away from 50. Kobe dribbles right, down the middle, all the way, powers up, 50! Kobe has 51 points as he lays it up and in. Are you kidding me? 51 points on the last night of your NBA career? Who does this? Shelvin Mack traveling, and the Lakers aren't dead yet in the game. 96-90.
Who does this? Only one guy. They're watching him right now. You're listening to it. 1:34 to go. Now, when is Byron going to take Kobe out? I think if he scores the next bucket, they should commit a foul and take him out. Even though this game is winnable, so you just leave him in? They're only down six with 1:34 to go.
That's a great question. I don't know.
I would leave him in until the last possession.
There he is. Kobe down the middle. Pulls up. 15-footer. Good!
Yeah, Lakers running
53
down
for Kobe. 96-92. It's a four-point game. Everybody on their feet, including the Laker players. Crowd chanting defense. Gordon Hayward. Top of the key. Hayward. Three-pointer. No good. Rebound Nance. Give it to Kobe. 105
He's looking to pull up
to go
shoot
in
three.
The game. 105. Three-pointer by Bryant. Good! Timeout, Utah! Kobe has 56 points, and it's 96-95 Jazz. Exactly 1 minute remaining in the game. They're going to look at Kobe's last three to see if he was behind the line. And everybody, including Jack Nicholson, is jumping up and down. You ever see anything like this?
No, this is surreal. This is like otherworldly. I mean, for him to, number one, have the energy to play like this at 37, and in a game that's competitive, and the game's up for grabs right now. So, you know, you don't take him out. You let him play until the last possession, and let him just stay on the court and just enjoy the ovation after the final buzzer.
Staples Center is as loud as it's been all year, obviously. And if you're just tuning in, where you been? Jazz 96, Lakers 95, Kobe Bryant has 56 points. You heard me, 56 points. And Michael, now 60, which he's only done five times in his entire career, is not out of the question.
No, 59 seconds to go. The Lakers will get another couple of possessions. You bet. He can get there.
Kobe looks dead tired. He's played 41 minutes.
He says he's going to get up tomorrow and work out. You really believe he will?
Not after this performance.
He's over there talking to Byron Davis. Byron Davis is pumping him up.
All right, here we go. Utah ball. Jazz lead by one. 1 minute to go in the game. Kobe with 56 points on the final night of his career. Hayward has it. Left side, Shelvin. Mack almost dropped it out of bounds. Mack, top of the key, Trey Lyles. Lyles back to Mack. Three-pointer by Shelvin Mack. No good. Rebound, D'Angelo Russell. Gives it to Kobe. Kobe has the ball. Lakers trail by one. Kobe dribbling left. Around a pick from Randle. Pulls up. Two-pointer. Good! 58 for Bryant. The Lakers lead by one. If I wasn't sitting here, I wouldn't believe it. This is like out of a movie. If I turn this in for a script, no one would believe it.
His teammates are all falling down like they're fainting over there. They can't believe what they're seeing.
They trailed by 15. Kobe has 58 points, and they lead 97-96.
You know the whole world's tuning in right now. If people weren't watching, everybody's calling and texting all their friends. You better tune in. You're missing something special.
58 points, four rebounds, and three assists. And his career, Michael, is over in 31.6 seconds. And the Lakers lead by one. I had kind of ruled out the game.
Yeah, kind of.
I thought, well, maybe Kobe can get 50.
You know, you kind of hope the Jazz can score here and have about 15 seconds to go on the clock so Kobe can just come down and knock down a game winner. It's almost like the way the fates are going to have this all play out. The Jazz have 31.6 seconds. Obviously, a full 24 seconds to get a shot off.
Kobe is exhausted. His teammates are jumping up all over. And look at the smile on Gary Vitti's face. Vitti retiring after tonight. And this building is as loud as it's been since the 2010 finals. No one is left. Everyone on their feet. Utah ball with 31 seconds to go.
Their go-to guy is Gordon Hayward. So look for him to probably try to make a play here or set up a play for him to get a shot off. He's being guarded by Jordan Clarkson.
Kobe is guarding Joe Ingles, who is unlikely to take the shot. That's smart. So it's Kobe, Clarkson, Nance, Randle, and Russell.
Ingles will take it if you leave him alone. He's a good shooter.
Trey Lyles has it in the left corner, guarded by Randle. Give it to Hayward. Back to Lyles. Lyles dribbles right. Lyles down the middle. Met by Randle. Puts it up, no good. Ball's loose. Lakers have it. Shot clock is off. Kobe's got the ball.
They got a foul.
Brings it into the front court. They foul him, and Kobe has a chance to get to 60 and put the Lakers up by three. Listen to this crowd.
Thank you.
They had a foul to give. So get the ball back to Kobe and make them foul him again.
So my bad, no free throws here. That was the first in the last 2 minutes. If they foul again, and Kobe has the ball again, dribbles right, and they foul him. So now he goes to the free throw line. If he makes these two free throws, Kobe has 60, and the Lakers lead by three. There are 14.8 seconds to go. 14.8. Listen to this building. 97-96 Lakers. First free throw by Kobe. Good. 59 points. I don't think Utah's going to call a timeout. So after this free throw, they're going to try and play it out. Kobe's second free throw. Good. He has 60. The Lakers lead by three. Here we go. Utah needs a three to tie it. Hayward driving down the middle all the way to the rim. Lay it up. No good. Rebound grab. Kobe's got it. Length of the court pass to Clarkson. Clarkson at the rim. Slam dunk. Game in the refrigerator. Kobe's last night. He's going to score 60. And I don't believe what I just saw. The Laker players have embraced Kobe as a team at half court, and the game is not over. 4.1 seconds to go in the game. And you talk about sending a guy out right. Wow.
Wow is right. That was amazing just to listen to all over again. And John Ireland will join us in just a second to recap it, and we'll have some fun talking to him about a number of different things as well. So Ireland will join us in a second. Sedano with you here on 710 ESPN. If you missed any of our interviews today with Mark Jones, with our senior shout-out Jackson Kramer, or if you missed that awesome segment that we just had for you with Kobe Bryant's last game, the last 3 minutes and 5 seconds, where he went on a personal 11-2 run to seal it, called by our friend John Ireland, who will join us in a second. If you missed any of that, check out our interview on demand section of the Sedano Show podcast on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, wherever you find your podcast. Brought to you by Capital One Quicksilver Card, earning 1.5% cash back on every purchase everywhere. What's in your wallet? John Ireland giving us the straight talk by Straight Talk Wireless. Everything for less, only at Walmart. You sounded, and I've heard the call now multiple times, but I always marvel at you are a great broadcaster, but you went into full fun, I'm having a blast mode, and you nailed every single line there, including the movie line, the script, the whole thing, that nobody would believe it. Like, it just sounded like it was the most fun you've ever had at a game, ever.
It might have been, George, and thank you for all that. It was, if you looked around the building, the faces you saw and the people that were there, it was like a finals game. And it was everybody in Laker history was there, you know, from Magic to James Worthy to Shaq to, you know, anyone who they kind of came to pay tribute to Kobe. And then you looked at the entertainers that were there, from Kanye to Jay-Z to Snoop to Dustin Hoffman to Jack Nicholson. It's the only time we used to do a thing called the third chair, where we'd interview fans at games. And it's the only time Nicholson's ever talked to us, George.
Right.
Greg Bergman, who is now producing your show, was working for me that night, and he walked up to, I'd say, just go ask Nicholson, and Greg did, and Jack said, sure. And we only talked to him for a minute, but it was surreal. It was everything that, the one line that I think made the most sense is, if you would have turned it into Hollywood as a movie, they would have kicked it back. It was too Mighty Ducks, but it wasn't. It really happened. It was unbelievable.
The funniest part was, as I was listening back to that, when he got to 51, Michael says to you, you think Byron's just going to take him out and just foul and take him out? And you were like, well, maybe, but the game's already within a couple of buckets. And I'm like, Michael, what are you doing?
Well, I figured they had to get him out at some point. They couldn't end with him on the court unless it was a game winner situation, where, like, they were down one or up one and he had to be out there. So that's what I was thinking when Michael suggested it. I said, I know where you're going. I mean, they got to get him out so he can get this ovation. But, George, it worked perfect. I mean, he basically put the team on his back. There was a situation with 5 seconds left where they were able to take him out. And when I say he was dead tired, I mean, he was walking like an old guy who could barely shuffle his feet. You know, it's days like this. I miss him every day, man. I miss the ton out of Kobe, but it's days like this where, and this is the first time it's really, it would have been so fun to have him on today.
Oh my God.
To talk about this, because he would admit things that he wouldn't normally, you know, like, yeah, I was so tired. And there were some, if you watch that on TV, and by the way, George, that clip you guys just played, one of our listeners, a guy named Kevin Smets, put it on YouTube where he matched ESPN's video to our radio call. And I sent it out on Twitter today, and you'll see several times some great shots of Kobe's family, including Gigi, who is there just like, is this really happening? And it was, you know, he just had such a flair for the dramatic. And that was, I don't know, do you think anybody will ever break that record as long as you and I are alive, 60 points in your final NBA game?
No, the answer is no. And it's funny because I had this, you know, Dwayne Wade and I communicated and I asked him a while, you know, during his last season, I said, what do you want to do for your last game? He goes, I sure as hell can't go for 60. That's the first thing out of his mouth. He's like, you know what? I think what I want to do is something that, you know, like, I probably will want to do like a triple double. And to his credit, he nailed it on a triple double. But it was hilarious how the first thing he said to me was, I ain't going for 60, so get that out of your mind right now.
It was after the game, it was fun talking to the other Lakers, the guys like Larry Nance and Julius Randle and D'Angelo Russell. And I said, especially to D'Lo, I said, all right, so you got a rebound, a key rebound at the end. You know, you're a point guard. The ball kind of runs through you. What's going through your head in that fourth quarter? And he said, get the ball to Mamba. Because I never thought about taking a dribble towards the basket. I never thought about taking a shot. It was, all right, who has to set a screen so we can get the ball to Kobe?
Yeah.
And every possession in that fourth quarter, Kobe touched the ball.
It was the only time D'Angelo and Byron might have been on the same page then, potentially that season. Judd, real quick, another great moment in LA sports is going to be on the air tomorrow. ESPN is going to run back the Kirk Gibson game at, I believe, might be 5 o'clock Pacific. I'd have to check on the time. But we were talking about that particular game and like what the memories were. I was 11 years old and I remember watching it. Vince Scully, Joe Garagiola on the call. I was a kid in Miami watching. It was one of the most incredible moments because they were such big underdogs in that series. What do you remember from that night?
I was at a party at my friend Greg Kerr's house. I was a young 25-year-old sportscaster in Beaumont, Texas. And you remember that Mike Davis had walked, and they called up Gibson. And I walked out to the balcony where he had a keg. Remember how people used to bring kegs to parties?
Yeah.
And he had a keg, and I was filling up my beer when the room went nuts. And I ran in time to see Gibson round the bases, but actually missed. I saw it on all the replays. But I was out on a balcony getting a beer when he hit the home run. I thought I had more time than I did. I even made a joke. I said, Gibson, he can't even walk. It's going to take him 40 seconds to walk to home plate. probably, I think somebody, the LA Sports Council or somebody did, what's the greatest single moment in LA sports history? And that's what won it, Gibson's home run in 88.
Yeah, it's got to be, for sure near the top if it's not at the top. It's funny you mentioned that because Tracy Murray, who's our colleague here at ESPN LA, she's one of our great salespeople, sent me a message when we were talking about this earlier. Get this. She says, I was at the game. My greatest sports experience by far. I was a kid with my family, and we had season tickets. We left our seats to beat the traffic, okay? The rush of the parking lot, slowly walking down the low section, down the first base line. My now deceased father hated getting stuck in the parking lot like everyone. We stopped, though, to see Gibson at bat with everything in our hands, transistor radio in hand, listening to Vinny. And then it happened. We went nuts. We got in our car to hear the postgame show. It was amazing. My dad in the car said the game will be talked about for many years to come, and here we are.
Well, George, one of the most famous shots in LA sports history is if you go back and watch Gibson's homer, like pull it up on YouTube, you'll see in right field the brake lights. Somebody is doing exactly what Tracy and her family were trying to do, get out of the stadium to beat the traffic. And, you know, they've got a clean shot. And the minute you hear you see the ball land in the seats. So, you know, whoever was doing the game on the radio, because I think Vin was doing TV, said, I think it might have been Don Drysdale if he was still alive. I can't remember.
Right. That's true. Right. Because Vin and Joe were doing NBC. Yep.
And you see these brake lights in right field slam on. like the cars like flying out of the stadium to beat the traffic. And it's like, what have I done? We had Ron Shelton, who's made all those great sports movies,
yeah,
on the show last week, and he was at that game. You know, before he did Bull Durham or any of his, you know, Tin Cup or White Men Can't Jump, he was a baseball fan. He's a minor league baseball player, and he was in the stands at that game when Gibson hit the homer.
John, last thing before we go, we got about 2.5 minutes here. I mentioned a story that popped up today on Zach Lowe's podcast. Michael Carter Williams told a story about his second season in Philly and how the Sixers were at the Pfister Hotel, the haunted hotel in Milwaukee.
Been there many times.
Yeah, and that Carter Williams arranged with the hotel staff to enter all of the rookies' rooms before they could. They removed the vents, inserted a walkie-talkie, then sealed the vents shut, and then also placed baby monitors in each room because he was on the same floor as them. And he could watch them as he whispered menacing threats and nursery rhymes to them. It's one of the funniest pranks I've heard. You've been around these guys for so long. What's a great prank that you've heard over the years?
All right, so to get this in your 2.5 minute limit, I'll just tell you that Jay Johnstone used to mess with Tommy Lasorda all the time. And so one day, Lasorda is screaming at the team that you cannot be late for the bus. You cannot. They're going to a spring training game in Vero Beach. Cannot be late for the bus. Johnstone and Jerry Royce tie a rope around Lasorda's door from the outside to a tree. So he's leaving 15 minutes early to get to the bus. And Lasorda picks up his phone and says, there's a problem with my door. I got to get to the bus. Somebody has to let me in. And they said, hello? Hello? Is anybody there? They had taken the speakerphone out of his receiver in his phone and left him in the room, and Lasorda couldn't get out of the room. And it turned into a prank war. Like, they just pranked each other for the rest of spring training. But that's what started it. And so when you have more time one day, I'll tell you where it escalated from there. But that's the beginning to one of the best prank wars ever.
That's hilarious. What do you got on the show today? Anything yet? You know,
John Hamm coming on today.
Sweet.
The great John Hamm, Don Draper from Mad Men.
Yeah.
And I don't know what else is going on, but I'm looking forward to talking to him. We've never had him on before.
That's awesome. Obviously, you got to talk to him about Curb, so enjoy that, too. His cameos on the show this season were fantastic.
I'm banned.
John, have a great show, man. Be good. Stay
healthy.
All right,
George. See you later.
There he is. There's John Ireland. All right, we're done here. Thanks to John Ireland. Thanks to Laura and Greg, who put together, particularly Laura, that Kobe snippet there of his final game, the four-year anniversary. We figured we'd play it, and it was good to have John on, too. Thanks to Jackson Kramer, our senior shout-out. Thanks to Mark Jones, who joined us as well. Thanks to you guys for listening and calling in. We love you. Stay healthy. We'll talk to you tomorrow at 10. See ya.